whether it's a salad, a hamburger, or that egg sandwich you eat every morning, the way your meal gets made has an impact. The What You're Eating podcast wants to help you understand how your food gets to your plate. Join host Jerusha Klemper as she uncovers the problems with the industrial food system and how you can overcome them. From practical conversations with farmers and chefs to discussions with policy experts on the barriers to sustainability, Food Prints podcast doesn't just cover what you're eating, it covers everything from the why to the how. Listen and subscribe to What You're Eating at foodprint.org/whatyoureeating or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Coming In for a Landing podcast on the Liberty Ballers podcast network. Here's your host, Paul Hudrick.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this edition of the Coming In for a Landing podcast on the Liberty Ballers podcast network. I am your host and the community producer of Liberty Ballers, Paul Hudrick. And I am joined by, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to get you on here, because that's probably bad, right? Like, I feel like Jazz is the only other person I've had on our site, but that will be the great Dave Early, who is going to join me today. Dave, how are you, man? How are things?
Good. I was starting to think that maybe Adieu and Sean had my bird rights.
Well, they kind of did. Well, I will say that, because I feel like we had previous conversations about you possibly joining me. And then, like, at one point, Adieu already had you, and then another time Sean was going to have you. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll, you know, as the leader here, I will allow them to do that, and I will step aside and allow them to have you for that. But,
well, we appreciate your delegation.
I'm trying my best here. So we're going to touch on a lot of things, you know, a lot of everything wrapped up last week as far as media availability. We talked to Daryl Morey, talked to Doc twice, talked to all the players at some point or another about the season ending and kind of, you know, what the future looks like. We'll touch on that and what the, you know, the roster construction and things that are ahead and what the offseason could look like. Some interesting guys making some interesting comments and / Twitter likes about the Sixers. And then we're going to touch on the Doc Rivers stuff because it seems worth touching on. We'll get into more of that. But Dave, I want to start with, I guess we'll go from here. It's been what? It's been a week. It has been a week. And I guess for you, what stage of grief are you in as we sit here today?
Oh, man, I still have these flashes of hope when I think about Joel Embiid's game winner in Toronto and how high my expectations were at that moment. You know, like, you have a chance to sweep in the first round. So I think I'm in denial, maybe.
That sounds like denial, yeah.
I'm having a little nostalgia. I mean, I obviously have already delved into the weeds of some of these apron and hard cap and Beal and Levine, whatever, for writing. But I think emotionally, I'm still in denial.
See, but that might also be a form of acceptance in a weird way. Like, you're just like, if you're feeling nostalgic about it, like, it's just like, all right, this happened and it's over. And like,
yeah,
let's not, you know, what is it? Don't be sad because it's over. Be happy that it happened or whatever.
Yeah, better to have loved this team than lost.
Never. But no, maybe denial. Like, just no, Joel Embiid never broke his face. What are you talking about? That never even happened.
Yes,
it's we got game four tonight, right? Like, that's it. But yeah, it's been a week, and it feels like I had to look and say to myself, like, it's been a week, because it feels like it's been way longer than that. Like, it feels like that happened months ago now at this point. Maybe that's just because of the season we all went through, with the craziness, with the Ben Simmons stuff, with the James Harden stuff, with everything that's happened in between. It just felt like 2020 was a really long season. This somehow felt even longer as someone who covers the Sixers, which is totally bizarre. But I want to get into some of the fallout from game six. We don't really have to rehash game six too much because there's really not that much to rehash. They just weren't very good. But a lot of interesting comments made post game. And I guess the first thing I'm going to start with, Dave, is James Harden. He was asked about whether he would pick up that option, $47 million plus option for next season. He did not say yes, but said in no uncertain terms, like, he will be here. He is planning to be here next year. When we talked to Daryl Morey the next day, you know, during exit interviews on Friday, same thing. The plan, he said the plan all along when we made the trade was that James would be here beyond this year, which makes sense because that's a really risky rental to take on and not have the time to perhaps make that all work. So I guess to start, we'll go, what do you see? We've seen a bunch of reporting out of what a James Harden deal could look like. Obviously, he is eligible for that Supermax. I don't envision a scenario in which he gets it here. I don't envision a scenario in which he gets it, quite frankly, anywhere, with all due respect to him and the great career he's had. But after that playoff run, I can't imagine there are teams lining up, teams that are lining up and that have cap space to throw $270 million, I think it is, at him. So just what do you see as fair for Harden? What do you see as fair for the Sixers when you're talking about an extension?
Yeah, it would be, at this point, it would be really crushing as a Sixers fan if he were to opt in. And we were excited that he might have opted in when we first heard about the trade. I think Yaron Weitzman said he was opting in, and we were like, oh, nice. He's at least here next year, and then we can hash out. Now it's like, oh man, if he opts in, they're not going to have wiggle room this summer to improve. I'm trying to look at it from, you know, I was listening to that awesome podcast that Jazz did with, was it Lee Steinberg?
Yeah.
And trying to put myself in James Harden's shoes. I know he hasn't had an agent over the years. If I was him and I turned down a $208 million extension last October, hoping for a $270 million one, and now I'm hearing, you know, Ramona Shelburne say maybe a 3+1 that totals 120, that's got to be tough. You know, they talk about loss aversion in psychology. It's harder to think you have something and then let it go. If he's willing, and if the Sixers had to promise him certain things, you know, like who knows what Michael Rubin said to woo him away from Brooklyn and ask out.
Or what Meek Mill promised them, or what?
Yeah, like the keys to the city. He was probably thinking, all right, my 5-year deal is a foregone conclusion. Can I get 250? Is it going to be 280? Yeah. So now that we're talking like 2+1 and 3+1, it would be a big deal for me to not opt in and take half of that. And I'm starting to worry, like, if he does not opt in, he may know he's cooked. Like, if you wanted to bet on yourself, you would opt in and say, I'll be a free agent next year. Someone will give me $200 million. And if he does, maybe if he does opt in, maybe he's on borrowed time and he could leave next summer. So there's a couple ways that it could happen. And then you have new worries that arise for you.
Yeah. I think you can look at it either way, right? Like if he opts in, that could be him saying like, all right, like I want to cash out now because I want that $47 million, and whenever we're talking money, I mean, I can't begrudge anybody for doing whatever they do. Like that, it's your money, man. Like I can't ever, the contract was signed. That's the contract that was agreed to. So you get your money, you get what you were owed at the time. And that is what it is. I hear what you're saying about the idea of like, if he doesn't opt in, he's not necessarily betting on himself, and he's taking something less with, you know, whatever, 3 for $90, 4 for $120, whatever. But the guy is going to be 33 years old. I mean, and he has Joel Embiid now as his teammate, who's, you know, he is in that best player on the planet argument. Maybe James just sees this as, all right, like this is my last shot. Like if I can't make this work with Joel Embiid, I don't know that there's a better situation for me elsewhere. I tried it with the Nets with KD and Kyrie. That didn't work out for me. If I move on from this and I try to find another team, like where do I go from here? Like, I know it's something that you and I have talked about, and we talked about in the Liberty Baller Slack, like the Lakers. Like, is there some kind of way he can finagle his way there? Is that what he wants? Like, does he want to play with LeBron? Does he want to play with Anthony Davis? And does that even work? Does that make sense for those guys? I don't know. But I might view, and maybe this is me, maybe this is like kind of a rosy view of it, but like I view him as possibly taking that deal. Like, again, like I think what you said initially, like the 3+1 for like 120, that last year being that option year, I think that makes the most sense really for both sides. Because if Daryl Morey, even if it's not, and we're going to get into this, even if it's not that third or fourth star, however you want to look at it, whether like if it's that another star you're trying to get, or you're just trying to have more flexibility to try to get a better supporting cast, I could understand why James would say like, all right, I want to give you some more wiggle room. I've made a ton of money. I want to win. Who knows? I mean, I guess James Harden is one of those guys, like, at least to me, I mean, you've covered him more than I have, but I feel like he's one of those guys who, James Harden is like the only guy who knows what James Harden is thinking. Like, he just seems like that kind of person. He's just not like, he's not a very expressive person. I mean, he's fine. Like, he's cordial with the media, but he's not overly expansive. But that does bring us to the next point when we talk about the idea of that super team. And again, whether you view Tyrese Maxey as the inevitable third star or you just look at whoever they might get in as the third star. You did a really good job, I thought, breaking that down in a piece the other day, just laying out the case. We've had, you know, Ramona Shelburne, we had Brian Windhorst both say that that's what Daryl Morey is intending to do, is to bring in another star player. And given his history, it's hard to not think that that's got some legs to it, right? So, I mean, I guess we'll start with this question. When you look at it as a whole, because we've heard a lot of stuff also in exit interviews in the last, all the stuff about toughness, which we'll get into, all the stuff about, you know, them lacking depth and not having enough, you know, Doc Rivers basically admitting, I don't have enough rotational playoff players. Do you think the approach should be, if they can land a star, let's throw that name out there, Bradley Beal, or should they look for other avenues to find more of those quote unquote dogs?
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult question to answer without knowing some of the dogs you're picking from, right? You know, if you ask me this and I have to give you an answer, I'm going with the studs and duds approach. Let me get Bradley Beal or Zach LaVine in-house if I can. Maybe I can wrangle up, you know, a $10 or a $5 million exception. If I didn't know anything, that's the route I would choose. But if you could start to present some alternative scenarios, like, are you using an asset? Do you have a taker for Tobias Harris money? And can you come up with a max where now you could distribute that to two or three guys? And I like all of them, and they're willing to come. Because if you just pick the depth argument end of this, I think you're susceptible to confirmation bias at the end of the summer. You could say, well, there's 7 to 10 guys. You wait until September or October and you pick the three best value signings and say, well, they could have just got those three guys. But in reality, you can't, because your chances are you're only going to get one of them. You might have to overpay if suddenly at the beginning of the summer, you could get PJ Tucker for $10 million and that takes two other guys off the table. You know what I mean? So if you're playing this out in real time, you're probably not going to get all of those values that we will see over the course of the summer. And I think you're better off than just bringing in the borderline all-star and feasting on scraps that might trickle down at the end.
Right. And that's when Morey was asked about it. And you and I talked about, you know, the other day about that one quote that Morey had where he was flat out asked, what does this team need? Or what are you most looking to get? And he said something about defense. Then he paused for like a good 5 seconds. It was actually like a little awkward, if I'm being honest. I was like, why is he pausing so long?
I remember the moment. I was like,
it was so weird. And then he said the reason I'm pausing is because I basically like kind of what your argument is. Like, you don't want to pigeonhole yourself and say we need X. And then, you know, if we don't get X, you know, or maybe X looks like a thing we need now, but if Y is something that might be better and maybe it makes X not as big of a deal. Like, for instance, like, you know, we're talking, I think it's obvious in this scenario where they would land another star player, Tobias Harris has to be gone. Like no matter how you look at it, whether it's in a sign and trade, whether it's dumping him to like an OKC, like his money's got to go in order to make this work. And, you know, the question will come up, all right, well, who's your starting four? Well, if Bradley Beal's here with Tyrese Maxey and James Harden and Joel Embiid, I don't really care that much about who my starting four is, or at least not as much as I would have otherwise. Right. So I think when Morey says that, I think that's what he's saying is, yes, your roster will be top heavy, but then you don't have as many holes to fill because those four guys are going to play such a huge role and they're going to make everyone else's job easier and make like, I think that's something too with like, with a James Harden, with a Bradley Beal, I'd say Maxey's not quite there yet, but Joel Embiid as well, just making everyone else on the floor, making all their jobs easier. Like, I would even consider playing Paul Reed. If that's a scenario, like, I would consider starting Paul Reed at the four. Tell him to watch a bunch of Jared Vanderbilt film from Minnesota this past year. Like, just go get a bunch of offensive rebounds, play really good defense, be switchable. And then Paul Reed, because he does have the touch to do it. If you're wide open, take a three. So like I think it just makes when you get the more star talent you have, it makes everything easier on the supporting cast, and you could be a little bit more creative and do some different things. Now, I would agree that you would still need to do something, but like you touched on, if you do that scenario that I just said, where let's say it's a sign and trade where you get Bradley Beal, Tobias Harris is out, you would get that biannual and then the mid level. So you'd be talking, you know, around $10 million, I think it is. And then the other one's around what, like five or six, something like that.
Not quite. Yeah. But yeah, four or five.
Four or five. So then you're looking at like, you could probably get two pretty good players.
Or three if you broke that up. Sure,
exactly. Yeah. Or three. Right. Or three. And then also you would have, like you said, like the scraps, like you would have some veterans who would come here for the minimum, who would want to play with James Harden, who would want to play with Joel Embiid,
ben
would
want to play with Bradley Beal.
And yeah. Forgive me, Dave, but who for would want to play for Doc Rivers, like Andre Drummond last season? Yeah. Not that you can bank on that, right? Because I mean, that Drummond, they struck gold on that. That was, you know, that just really worked out really well. Maybe he'll come back. Who knows?
But, I think you could bank on a big who cannot shoot or switch wanting to play for Doc, knowing he will get all of those minutes. Who that is, I don't know. Mitchell Robertson is too good at switching. He's not going to want to play for Doc.
That's well played. But listen, Andre Drummond in the playoffs, they might actually have stolen a game in Miami. Who knows? Him and James Harden would have been great together, right? That would have been a great combo. But anyway, I digress. But we did touch on the idea of toughness and then perhaps trying to acquire some. And we have you wrote an interesting piece today, highlighting two guys who certainly fit that description, right? Of that toughness, of that dog mentality, and would bring a little bit of that in Patrick Beverley and Marcus Morris. We had Patrick Beverley on ESPN who was flat out asked like what the Sixers need. And then he goes on to describe himself.
Oh, which openly I thought, campaigning for a roster spot.
Right.
While inked with the Wolves.
Yeah. It's tremendous, just tremendous stuff. And then Marcus Morris liking a tweet when someone writes about the idea of Marcus Morris being a really good fit as that dog guy. And then Marcus liking that on Twitter. And it's like, okay, yeah. As Harrison Grimm, our elite internet sleuth.
He finds everything.
He really does. I don't know that there's anyone better out there at just finding things. Like it's incredible.
For those listening, he'll come on our Slack and be like, so I'm in a Twitter spaces and Mark Stein just said, and we'll be like, what?
Dude, he does it. It's great. Like, but and what I love is like it gets all of us talking. Like, it's so good. Like, he's like the Kindle to the Liberty Baller Slack fire. Like, yes. He really is. Like, he just gets it all started.
Keep sleuthing, Grim.
But when you look at either of those guys, do you see a path? Do either of them interest you? Like, is there one guy you like more than the other? Like, how do you kind of view either of those guys as like being realistic as guys they could get?
I am erring on the side of no. I think it would be pretty complicated. I think you're looking at you break Harris down into a couple contracts, right? And so you're talking like three teams here. I don't know where Harris goes. I don't think the Clippers would be interested in him. I could see the road where the Clippers are like, all right, we got Kawhi, we got PG, we just inked Covington, and now we have Powell. This is going to be a bit much even for Ballmer. Maybe this guy's got to go, and maybe he knows that, so he didn't mind liking, you know, some love from his hometown teams. It's something like that. He did hit seven threes in a game seven, and he did knee Ben Simmons in the head and bop Justin Anderson in the face. So he's got some of that fight in him. I have a trouble coming up with these scenarios other than that. Like, are you doing Korkmaz and Thybulle and two small contracts to come up with $13 million to get Beverley? Is there some creative solution that I'm not smart enough to think of? But
this is pretty accurate. Yeah. Like, this is probably what would have to happen. Because Morris, yeah, like you couldn't get the Furkan and then stacking other contracts. You couldn't get to Morris most likely doing that, but you could feasibly get to Pat Bev. I don't know. Maybe you could sneak another player in there somehow. I don't know. But then again, that goes back to the idea of if they do something like that, you're going to have to be minimum contract hunting, which again, if you get those guys, you feel better about that because you already satisfied those needs. So yeah.
You'd have to really value one of them and then go for it. You know, if Danny Green were fully healthy, you'd take him at $10 million. you could now get in the ballpark for Beverly or Morris, but you wouldn't want to because Green's arguably been better than Beverly anyway. And so that's, you know, you kind of get into this, well, do I really want one of those two guys that badly to make this happen?
Yeah, no, and they might. I mean, so Pat Bev obviously has history with a lot of people on the Sixers, as you pointed out in the article today, you know, whether it's Morey, whether it's Doc, whether it's James Harden. Morris has the obvious connection to Philly and to Doc. Him and Joel Embiid haven't always been seen eye to eye on things, I guess is the way I'll put it. I think Joel would be quick to squash that if he thought that Morris was a guy that could help them win. But yeah, I mean, I guess the issue, like, so for me, if you're telling me that there is a way, and I don't even mean this to be disrespectful to Tobias Harris, because, you know, it's really just a money thing with him. If he was actually on Morris's contract, I wouldn't be nearly as quick to want to do this. But if you found a third team to facilitate and take on Harris, whether that's a team like OKC that would just be taking on the salary, whether that's a team that maybe views him as a credible player for them, which is not the craziest scenario. And then the Sixers wind up with Morris as their starting four. I wouldn't hate that. I do think that he would add, like, credit to Tobias because he clearly adjusted and he started taking those quick hit threes and he didn't hesitate nearly as much when Harden and Embiid created those. But like, that's not something you would need to remind Marcus Morris of. Like, I feel confident he would just be firing. And so that is a benefit. And then, yeah, just adding a little bit more of that toughness and that edge. I think there is something there. And then like the Pat Bev thing's interesting because if he wants to be here, and depending on how Minnesota views him, maybe there is a scenario where they would be willing to, like, if you guarantee Danny Green's $10 million and you make that work, where if Danny Green can play some games for Minnesota, maybe they view him as a better fit for them in one way or another. And if they have him on the roster, it would then be easier to, even if he, I know we, you and I debated about the idea of him actually playing this year and he wants to come back by the All-Star break, which whether or not that's realistic, probably not at 35 years old, but who knows. But even if you get him, it's easier to retain him for the following season. So if you like him, but yeah, like you said, it's clearly the way we're talking about it, it's complicated. So you would have to really, really, really want one of those guys in order to make it happen. But both guys, again, the tie-in with Doc Rivers. So that could be something.
We're going to take a quick break, but more with Dave Early after this.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And speaking of Doc, Daryl Morey came out very quickly. Howard Eskin asked, and Daryl Morey said yes, and then said, okay, we're on to the next question. And then kind of when asked to elaborate, he said, yeah, man, I kind of already answered that, and we're moving on. So that's the public answer. And then privately, from what I've been told, that relationship is actually really good. Doc and Daryl really get along. I view it as perhaps one of those situations where Daryl likes the idea that him and Doc think differently. And I think a lot of good managers, bosses do that. They hire people that have a different mindset to them so that their ideas, they're kind of bouncing stuff off each other and looking at it from different perspectives. But there's still that Lakers noise out there. The Lakers still don't have a head coach. The Charlotte Hornets also don't have a head coach, even though Mike D'Antoni has been the favorite for what, like a month now? And they just started conducting. I think they had Terry Stotts in. Is it Darvin Ham they're bringing in for a second interview? Yep. Yeah, so they're clearly looking around as well. And the Lakers front has really, to me, I don't know, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like it's been pretty damn quiet on the Lakers head coaching front recently. I know they interviewed Ham as well, I think. But I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase it, but like, and then we had, I guess you saw it, the Woj report that basically keep an eye on the Lakers when it comes to Doc. So is there smoke here to you, or do you think this is all just like guys leveraging? Like, how do you kind of, what's your read on the whole situation?
Yeah, I sense that the relationship between Daryl and Doc, in terms of maybe interpersonally, it's fine, but I don't think from a basketball perspective, it's as smooth as they want us to feel it is. Because when you think of the history, you know, you have Daryl saying things like, I want them to get really experimental and surround Ben Simmons with shooters. And then we watch like 4 or 5 months of Ben Simmons plus Dwight Howard. And so there were a lot of head scratching moments where you thought like, oh, he brings in Tolliver, and Doc's like, well, what do you want me to do? Bench Tobias. And the fan base was screaming, no, bench Mike Scott. And I just feel like there's these little notes every once in a while. And then those were magnified in the following season where Daryl is saying Ben Simmons is a top 30 player in this league. He's a top 25 asset. And you got Doc every few weeks saying, he can't handle the truth. His camp is like Trump supporters. So it makes me think that there's something about this group, and you follow all the reporting. I think your own Weitzman wrote like Doc was skeptical when they were first going to hire Daryl in the first place. I don't think that that's been a great fit. I don't think when Daryl signs a guy like DeAndre Jordan, he thinks, well, this dude should get all the minutes and never experiment with Paul Reed and Charles Bassey.
Well, then he shouldn't have signed him.
And that's fair. So I think that there's something about the working relationship that makes both of these guys look a little bit worse than we might otherwise see in a better fit. And you hear Daryl go all in on analytics and someone who could reassess in real time, and then Doc say stuff like, well, analytics is why Jokic is your MVP. You know, that stuff is too far blown. What is inverse variance? No thanks. So I think there is real noise. I think the Sixers are going to, you know, when Woj says stuff like they're going to meet and they're going to talk about the future and they're going to make sure they're all aligned, I think what he's saying is the Sixers are going to lay out a path where maybe the front office has a larger say in certain things, maybe the rotation card. And if Doc doesn't love it, he can certainly, you know, explore alternative scenarios. If suddenly living in LA appeals to him more than a possibly new tweaked arrangement in Philly, you know, then that would save the Sixers a whole lot of money.
Right. So he can go to the Lakers, where no one in LA will surely want to tinker with his rotations or have any advice for him as far as the front office or any of the players.
He'd have to be on board with LeBron's program, but
if the Kurt money was similar, and whoever yeah. else. No, but you and I mean, we'll agree to disagree on where Doc and Daryl are, because from people I've talked to, like they have a really good relationship, and you know, and even linking back to when Daryl was in Houston, he was interested in hiring Doc Rivers. And I think part of the reason Daryl came here, on top of course, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons were the biggest reason. And he saw what the roster could be. And, you know, and then also to be a little closer to home, I think was appealing to him as well. And, you know, his daughter obviously just graduated. I think she went to NYU. So like, I mean, I think clearly much closer than Houston. So I think all of that was certainly appealing to him. And it seems like they've been trying to, they tried to get an interview with Daryl Morey when he was still in Houston, and the Rockets wisely denied them of that. But I do think part of the reason he came here too is that he wanted the opportunity to work with Doc. I think these two guys have wanted to work together. I don't think that's
a crazy thing. Like, they have a history. They were both in Boston together. You know, Darryl was coming up at the time and Doc was the head coach, but they have a history. They know each other. And I think they've wanted to work together, and they have. Now, with that said, they've wanted to work together. Could it maybe not be going as either of them thought? Maybe that's possible. I will say I've been told, and it's the Sixers are saying up and down, Doc Rivers is our coach. He will be our coach next year. But that Lakers opening still being open, it makes me wonder, because I think Doc, like, it would have, like, they're not, like, I'll put it this way. They're not firing Doc. Like, that's not happening. Like, he is not getting fired. He is the coach of the Sixers. If he wants to be the coach of the Sixers, like, that's, I feel like we can both agree on that. Like, if he wants this job, he will be here next year.
Yeah.
With that said, if he wants to explore options, if the Lakers are a thing, if he wants to play golf because he loves golf and he loves the nice weather, and as he joked to us, he thinks the perfect job in the world is to be a weatherman in San Diego, which, man, it's hard to argue with. I don't know if you've ever been to San Diego, Dave, but I have. It is a wonderful, wonderful place.
I love my time there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gorgeous. And so I would, I get that. Totally understand that.
The zoo is even fun.
What's that?
The zoo is beautiful.
Oh, yes, it is. The zoo is great. And the beaches, you can't go wrong. Like, the entire beach is beautiful. A lot of good craft beer in that region too, which appeals to me. But yeah, it's, if he wants to be in LA, could they facilitate that? I would not be surprised if that happens. But again, I think the ball is in Doc's court. If Doc wants to be the coach of the Sixers, he will be the coach of the Sixers. If for some reason, whether it's something you just cited about roster, personnel, rotation-wise, whatever.
Yeah, do you think the Sixers could make his position in Philly just a little bit less enticing this offseason? Like, all right, well, we want to give the front office a little bit of say so that if we see you're playing Jordan, we're going to step in and say you can't do that.
So I think, like, legitimately, I know this too. Like, Darryl and Doc talk, like, every day. Like, that's not an exaggeration. They talk all the time. So like,
is Darryl not as, like, did he lose some of his edge from when he was in Houston, where he can't see the plus minus on some of these lineups, like the all bench stuff, the Ben White?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. But I do. But I'll say this too. I feel like Darryl is very, and I think he was like this in Houston for the most part. It's, I hired you, like, you're the coach. Like, I'm the GM. I'm going to, or, you know, basketball president, whatever. I'm going to find the players, and here you go. And it's up to you. Like, basically,
separation of church and front office.
Right, like, right. I'm going to buy the groceries. You're the chef. You cook the meal up, like, that kind of a thing. And so when Darryl goes out and, you know, picks up DeAndre Jordan, he is then entrusting Doc to use him how he sees fit. So if that was a concern that Darryl had, that if he signed DeAndre Jordan, that Doc wouldn't go with Paul Reed, that he wouldn't use Charles Bassey, that Daryl Morey, frankly, just should not have signed DeAndre Jordan. Like, that's, you know what I mean?
Or,
like,
or give him the Willie Cauley-Stein 10-day treatment.
Exactly. Like, it's just, if that was your thing, like, if you really didn't think DeAndre could help you and your concern was that Doc could play him too much, then you wouldn't have signed him. And then also, I think it's not, you know, Daryl Morey kind of subtweeting the fan base. Every time DeAndre Jordan did something at the end of the regular season and there was a highlight, he would share it on Twitter. Like, I'm, that felt like a pretty strong, like, hey, like, this is good. This is what I want, even though I don't know why it is what he wanted, but it was, apparently. But I'll let you get last word. So do you think, when it's all said and done, where Doc Rivers, is he the head coach of the Sixers or is he the head coach somewhere else?
Yeah, I think it's a safe bet to pencil him in as a Sixers head coach. I do think the guaranteed money is the biggest reason that is the case. I think Darryl essentially, you know, you pointed out, like, he wanted to work with this guy. I think he basically knew what he was signing up for when he took that. And, you know, look, we're 2 years into a 5-year deal. Let's at least give him the third year. I think that's the main reason. And when you hear, you know, Woj, Ramona, Fisher, everyone cites the money as, you know, a huge reason of why. And the next thing they talk about is the ascension that Joel Embiid has had. So I think Dog will be here. I think the money's a big deal.
Yeah, and I wonder too, when you talk about Joel and his ascension, like, continuity is not nothing, you know? Like, not to say you should keep a coach that you think is bad just for the sake of continuity, but there is something there with, like, I don't know, and I feel like a lot of times, like, a third year is kind of a big year. Maybe I'm just making stuff up in my head, but I feel like that third year is kind of the year. And then I think the way you justify it from the Sixers side of things, because listen, I'm not convinced that Doc Rivers is the right coach for this team. I'll say that. Like, I'm not. I don't know that he is. But there is a fair argument to make if you're the Sixers for giving him another season, because you're giving him a clean slate with a healthy Joel Embiid going into the next season, with hopefully a healthy James Harden, with Tyrese Maxey taking another step forward. And then you will have hoped either, you know, one way or another, the roster will also be improved, hopefully significantly, whether that's significantly with a star or whether that's significantly with that added toughness and just more guys that are playoff basketball players. So we will see, but we're going to have plenty more for you guys this off season. We've already got a bunch of stuff up on libertyballers.com. Dave has a couple excellent pieces, so please check those out. And we're going to have plenty as well, Jazz and the guys on the podcast network. So make sure you're rating, subscribing, downloading, all that fun stuff. This has been the Coming In for a Landing podcast on the Liberty Ballers podcast network. I am your host, Paul Hudrick, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you.
All right, man.
That was good.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.